Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
And it is 13 minutes after 12 o'clock here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in to this Thursday afternoon edition as we sit in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Okay, let's jump right into it because I have a couple of gentlemen in the studio who I want to introduce you to, Rabbi Evan Moffick and also Rabbi Ike Sarada. Welcome to both of you to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, Steve.
All right, so I don't know if you heard, but we have to do a promo every day for the show, and the promo I had for the program today was two rabbis and a radio host go into a studio, and a synagogue disappears.
Well, I don't know if I'd say a synagogue disappears, but it's a good intro, you know. And in fact, what happens is a new synagogue is born. Actually, the
that's a nice way to look at it, right?
Yeah, right, we've been telling all our members that they're founding members of something.
Well, I saw that was in your press release, and I actually highlighted that because I think that's an interesting way to go. So not to get ahead of ourselves, but each of you is a rabbi of a congregation in Highland Park, and over several months now you've been considering, and the congregation's voted in favor of merging. The two of you are going to merge your congregations, your synagogues. Rabbi Moffett, what led to that?
Well, it's been a great process. We've been friends a long time, and we look out over the future of the Jewish community and see that while both our congregations are strong, we can do so much more together. We're literally 300 yards apart. Our demographics are similar. It's all in the same, you know, North Shore community, Highland Park, Deerfield, and we can do more programming. We can touch our members in more individualistic ways, and we can really set ourselves up for a brighter future. Each of our congregations has been around 60 years, and we kind of want to make sure we're here for at least another 60.
Are the numbers going down? I mean, is that part of what led to this?
Well, demographics in the Jewish community all across the country are that the community is getting older, and this is true in all religions, actually, is that synagogue attendance, church attendance, there is some diminution. So coming together makes sense for that, but it also gives us the opportunity to reach out because there are now two of us rather than one in an individual place.
So I grew up in the Catholic Church where the priest was kind of in charge, mm-hmm. and now we've got two competing rabbis. Who's going to win this thing here?
Yeah, well, it's not a competition.
I think, you know, we're both used to running our own show, so to speak, but we get along great, and so our goal is really just for the two of us to lead together, and I think we both have the personalities that'll make it work, and we've had some wise lay leaders that have asked us this question, and ultimately I think we're actually setting a trend for the country. You're seeing more co-rabbis exist. You're also, I predict, we're going to see at least a dozen more mergers in the next 10 to 20 years. So we're kind of pioneers, and we're going to work it out as we go.
All right. So Rabbi Moffick oversees Synagogue Solel, right? Congregation.
Yes.
And Rabbi Sarada is at Lakeside.
That's right.
When this merger is complete a year from this summer, neither of those congregations' names will exist, right? You're gonna when you talk about a new beginning, this isn't really one absorbing the other. You're going to start with a new name.
That's right. We have actually 18 different working groups that are thinking about all different kinds of aspects of synagogue life, and one of those things is what are we? What are we going to be? And what should we call ourselves because of that? So we think there'll be a completely new name that will be short and catchy and everyone will recognize it.
I talked to a lot of branding experts on the show. Maybe I'll have you put you in touch.
That's a good idea.
Rabbi Sarada, your congregation is moving to Rabbi Moffick's synagogue.
Yes.
So I would say it would probably be harder emotionally on yours than his. Tell me about that.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, we certainly have had so many wonderful experiences within our walls. So people will miss the sanctuary and the community room and those kinds of things. Nevertheless, almost 90% of the congregation voted in favor of this union of the two congregations. And it's never been confined to a building. You know, we've had meaningful experiences in hotel ballrooms, at weddings,
sure.
and in hospitals when people are ill. So it's not confined to a place.
You both need to be leaders. I mean, you're leading the congregation, but this calls for a particular type of leadership.
I suppose it does. And, you know, a lot of listening and a lot of holding hands and a lot of talking to people. And at some point, we'll probably have to figure out the ritual for desacralizing the building. And that may depend a little bit.
March the Torah scrolls from...
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's the plan.
But you can't walk through the golf course. They won't let you do it.
We're trying to
figure
that out.
Might have to pull a few strings.
We see there's a path. We haven't quite figured it out yet.
What has been the biggest surprise as each of you has gone through this so far?
I don't know whether this would be a surprise, but I just have been amazed by how similar our congregations are. You know, every congregation has its own unique story, and Lakeside was started for a certain reason, and Solel were people moving from Hyde Park. But today, there are really so many shared concerns. We're all looking for generally the same thing. Now, everyone has unique relationships with their rabbis and so forth, and that's important. But the general feeling, what people want out of their Jewish life, I think transcends each congregation.
That's Rabbi Evan Mofik, Rabbi Ike Serrata. To both of you, thanks very much for coming in. I know you've got a lot of work ahead, so good luck.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
it's
Steve.
A pleasure to be here.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Bertrand, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Elise Kling comes by a little bit later. You know, we're still talking about the new tax law and how it'll change things. And there's a couple of questions for Elise about charitable giving and how that might change under the new tax law. So that's in the next half hour. Right now, we say hello to Bill Geiger, our Conversations with Bill, sponsored by Geiger Wealth Management. Welcome back to the Wintrust Business Lunch, Mr. Geiger.
Nice to be here, sir. How are you?
Good. I just want you to know, I know every week you come by and we talk about my own personal 401k, and I haven't looked in a few days, so
that's
I'm
a
getting
good
a little
thing.
Separate.
That's a good thing.
But, you know, as people get closer to retirement, they try to figure out how they're going to do it, mm-hmm. and, you know, you always talk about the happiest people are the people with a pension because they know it's coming in every week.
Yeah, here's the issue. Most people don't have a pension. Social Security is not nearly going to be enough. And what do you do? How do you plan ahead for when your paychecks stop? If you think about it, you're going to go, once you retire, you're going to go the rest of your life without a paycheck. So you need to plan, you need to figure out how you're going to replace that. Where is that dependable, sustainable income going to come from?
Right. You know, and just personally, I've been having conversations about when I'm going to retire, mm-hmm. And it won't be for a week or two, so we'll talk
good.
Again.
How about see you next week?
but then you start to, I start to actually feel that in my head. It's like, well, wait a minute. If I just truly stop, then I got to make it with what I've saved.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's a little anxiety there.
And a lot of people don't really think about this until they get really close to retirement, Steve. But if you're in your late 50s to early 60s, it's real. You know, I've been on this program for going on 4 years this summer. And probably the most important thing I could say to the listening audience, you're in your late 50s, early 60s, start planning now mm-hmm. for how you're going to have dependable, sustainable income to pay your bills. It's probably one of the most important issues in planning for retirement.
A lot of people, when they get to that age, or maybe a few years before, their kids are gone, they're out to college,
right.
and then working. So then they start thinking, well, now is the time to really start saving for retirement, which is true, but it's more than just saving. You got to plan what you're going to do with that money.
It's not a matter of just building
socking
up
a
big stack of money and then picking at it. You know, that doesn't work over time. That's how people end up running out of money. You got to take that big stack, however big it is, and you got to take part of it and channel that into dependable, sustainable income. And the earlier you do it, Steve, that's why I'm saying late 50s, the earlier you do it, the more powerful, the more income you can get out of whatever money you set in that area.
When someone comes to your office, how does it sort of work? I mean, what's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing we do is we want to understand what's important to them, where they're at, how they got to where they're at, and really what's important to them going forward. Not you know, money's important, but what outcomes do you want? Do you want to leave a legacy for your kids? Do you want to travel more? Do you want to have a second home in the Carolinas? It's really important to understand who they are and what's important to them, because then you can start shaping a plan for them.
Do you find people who sacrifice their own retirement well-being because they want to leave money to their kids?
Most of the time, here's people's attitude. I've saved for all my life. I want to enjoy my retirement. And if there's something left,
right,
I want it to go to my kids with as small taxes as possible. But this is our money first.
Husband or wife, who's the easier one to work with?
It varies. The husband's
spoken
like
a married man. Man, he is a married man.
No, husbands like to beat on their chest about how much money they've accumulated. Women are really, really, really interested in how they're going to pay their bills. From the get-go, they want to understand how that's going to happen, because the husband's going to lose his paycheck.
Right.
How they're going to pay their bills for the next 20, 25, 30 years.
Well, so the implication there is that it's probably the wife who's been paying the bills through the... Do you find that's the case?
Yeah, for the most part.
Right.
For the most part. Late 50s, early 60s is still part of that old school, and that's how we kind of did things.
All right, so what do you suggest people do?
Well, we're going to do something for our listeners, and especially in this regard. For the next five callers who call in who have at least $500,000, we're going to help them put together a full-blown plan for their retirement. That's going to include how to create dependable, sustainable income so they can pay their bills.
The thing is, right, because it's got to be, it's more than, again, just a 401k statement. It's a plan or a strategy for what's coming up.
Yeah. How are you going to pay your bills?
Bill,
it's pretty important.
Thanks for coming by.
My pleasure.
Enjoy the weather. Looks like it's finally turning for you.
Thank you, sir.
Now, your noontime check-in with today's business world and more. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Here's Steve Bertrand.
It is 12:37 here on the Allstate, in the Allstate Showcase Studio this Thursday afternoon. On a phone line is Ian Schur. He's a senior editor at CNET.com and joins us from time to time to talk about the latest in technology and all that. Ian, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Now, I speak frankly here. You know, you're in a safe area, safe territory. Have you ever wanted just to completely clear our history?
Well, yes, and for multiple reasons, not just for the wink, wink, nod, nod.
So this is the new thing, right, from Facebook. They're saying that if you want a couple of buttons, you can clear your history altogether.
Yeah, so this is interesting. You know, Mark Zuckerberg had this big developer event this week in San Jose, which is 20 miles south of his Facebook headquarters. And he talked about this idea around clearing all of the data that Facebook collects on us. And you may not be aware, but there's actually a ton of data that Facebook collects, not just what profiles you're clicking on and what you like and everything, but also other websites you visit. And the reason they collect this is so that they can deliver better targeted ads at you, right? Their data shows that when you get an ad that's relevant to you, you're happier than when you get one that's completely irrelevant to you. And so that is what he's offering, is this opportunity now to basically remove all the information that Facebook tracks about you.
Is that going to help us when it comes to, I saw one expert say on TV or as a radio somewhere that the data that they're offering to get rid of, they don't really need anymore, that they've taken what they need that way, and the history of it isn't that important to them anyway, so this isn't really as if it's a big give on their part.
I would disagree with that expert. I think that the amount of information that Facebook collects about you is, first off, you are always changing as a person, right? That's what we like to tell each other anyway. And so one of the things that you can glean from your internet history or the websites you visit, for example, is that it could find out that you're expecting a baby, or that you are about to go on a trip or stuff like that, or even that you are looking at a pair of shoes on one website and looking on another and say, oh, maybe there's a good pair of shoes for you. So that information is always relevant to Facebook, and something that it would diminish the experience for you in terms of ads anyway, if you were to remove it.
All right, go from that to, I guess this isn't the same sort of privacy, but Facebook clearly knows what we've posted in the past. You know, we get those little videos, those memories and things like that. And now there's this talk, I don't know if this was at the F8 summit or Congress or meeting or whatever as well, but this idea that they might even I love when I get your memories on Facebook. I take a screenshot of it, I send it to my kids, they're horrified by what they looked like 5 years ago. Right. But then, and then I get a message, do not share, which I don't.
Right.
But they're looking at really enhancing that and making it even bigger. And I'm really interested in what they're going to do.
Yeah. So what they think they can do is that they can apply computer programs that actually try to map out what your home looks like. And stick wow. with me for a second. A lot of us take a bunch of photos in our homes, right? That's probably one of the most photographed parts of your life. And, you know, it's usually when friends are over or whatever, when you're having a big dinner. Well, Facebook thinks that it can gather all that information and create a virtual copy of your home that then when you're looking around inside of it, you can look at the photos that were taken over time. It's really weird, but if you look on CNET and look at the story about it, it'll kind of make sense.
Well, and I just wonder if that serves them well, if we're worried about what they know about us, and now all of a sudden they're going to show that they can create what my living room looks like. That might be a little creepy.
Well, that is part of the problem, is that a lot of this stuff can turn creepy real quick, which is why Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, spent a lot of time talking about responsibility and making sure privacy is at the center of everything they do. And, I mean, I see he spent more than half of his time on stage discussing privacy and security. He's very aware that everything that Facebook does can seem really creepy to a lot of people, and he needs to answer for that stuff.
Let's get away from Facebook for a couple of seconds here and go to Google. They unveiled this new, .app, .app, and security's involved there as well. Explain that for me.
Yeah, it's an interesting idea. So what they've done is that they are trying to avoid the problem that exists for a lot of people, which is that when you're downloading an app from another website and not from Google directly, it could be insecure. It could be hacked. It could be used to hack your phone. And not only that, prying eyes could watch you download it so they know what you're doing. Imagine you're in a repressive government and they might be tracking the apps you download and all that. So what they did, Google did, is that they set up this domain called .app. So imagine downloading podcast.app or pickle.app or whatever. It's automatically secured as part of that website. And so that's something they're hoping will help to make people feel more comfortable about downloading stuff.
And it'd be good for business too, right? If they started to take that from other domain areas?
Well, I mean, look, I don't think that that's going to happen so much. I think more than anything, what they're going to try and do is become the central place that you can know, oh, I'm downloading it. It's going to be safe. It's going to be no viruses, no malware, right? All these things that exist as a concern on everything that's not an iPhone, basically, is something that they really need to answer.
I was going to say, so they sort of brand themselves as being free of that, the way we think of Macs in many ways are
exactly
free of that.
Exactly.
Speaking of Apple, they came out with their earnings report this week, and the news was pretty good, wasn't it?
It was very good, and it's worth noting that there was a lot of concern beforehand that the iPhone X, which is one of the most important new devices Apple has come out with in a while, was not selling well. There was data that was coming out from Asia, right? All these companies that build the parts for the iPhone were indicating that sales were not very good. Well, Apple came out with their earnings release, and it turned out that they blew the doors off. They had one of the best March quarter they'd ever had. The iPhone X was doing gangbusters, and it turns out that people like Samsung, who make the screen for the iPhone, were having bad troubles elsewhere. It wasn't because of the iPhone, and in fact, the iPhone X is doing really well.
Right, so we looked at the idea that the suppliers weren't looking at good numbers, and that probably was an indication that Apple wasn't looking at good numbers, but the people who put those two together, forgive me, were comparing apples and oranges.
Well played, yes.
It's a terrible way to end it, Ian, but I'm afraid we're going to have to.
I'll always happily end on a bad joke.
That's just more history for us to erase. Ian Schur, a senior editor at CNET.com. Check it out. A lot of great websites here. Also, if you're thinking of picking up some electronic equipment, it's a great place to get some online reviews. All right, that's Ian. We're going to take a break, come back with a look at traffic and weather and all of that. But first, it's time for the Wintrust Business Minute.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Got a minute? Good, because I've got the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing the news, providing input, and breaking down the stories that matter to the world of business. Great news for the Chicago Public School System. 35 CPS locations are receiving a grant of $14 million from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, Mark Zuckerberg's philanthropic fund. It's going to help further the personalized learning needed more in schools today. This is obviously great news, but it makes you wonder if these announcements are coming in the wake of Facebook's data release story from late last month. Changes are always on the horizon, but presenting them in the right way is usually overlooked. And the latest change to the airline business is American Airlines halting its nonstop service from Chicago to Beijing by this fall. The company is saying it's simply a business decision as they can make more money on different routes, but it could be back up and running once Beijing's newest airport is complete. So getting from Chicago to China nonstop might take a little bit longer. Tune in tomorrow for all of your up-to-date business news on WGN Radio.
Back to Steve Bertrand and the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
It's 12:52 here on the Business Lunch. Elise Klink's on the phone line. Of course, Elise is the person behind ThinkLink.com, the CEO of Best Money Moves as well, that business HR for HR app, I should say, for and businesses to help their employees deal with their financial stress. Oh, Elise, I could always use a little of that. A little less financial stress, a little more apps. How are you?
Hey, things are good, Steve.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. So let's talk still about the new tax law. You know, we've filed under our old tax law about, two or three weeks ago. So let's start looking at the new one. And I saw this story. In fact, Bennett Wakenight, the producer, pointed it out to me, of different ways, different strategies to give to charities under the new tax law. Now, the idea, as I understand it, is because fewer of us will be quote unquote itemizing, there might be less incentive for us to actually give a charitable donation. The charities are worried about that. So these are some strategies to sort of help still give to charities and make sure it pays off when you file your taxes.
Right. Now we have the SALT deduction, which is the cap on the state and local taxes of $10,000. We've increased the amount of the standard deduction. And so many taxpayers who might have given a small amount to charity in a year may find that that no longer allows them to itemize their deductions. And so there are a couple of different ways that were suggested in this Kiplinger story, which are pretty interesting. And, you know, it's worth thinking about it. And one of the first things that I've heard a number of financial advisors and tax people say, which is also in this story, involves what they call chunking. So when you give money, if you can give in, let's say, January and December of the same year, what ends up happening is you're doubling up on the amount you give in 1 year, which may push you over the limit and allow you to itemize. And then the next year, you don't give at all. You do a standard deduction. And while some people might say, no, I'd rather give every year, if you're looking to itemize, that's a way of doing it.
Are there really that many people who are not going to have to itemize or not, you know, won't benefit from itemizing this year?
I don't think we really know. I'm not sure that anybody really understands how the capping of the SALT deduction is going to play out. I know that in our house, when Sam did our taxes this year, we used TurboTax. He ran a simulation of what it would look like without being able to, with the cap, rather, of the $10,000 SALT cap and some of the other caps that have been imposed. And what he found is that for us in our situation this year, because we don't know what's going to happen, or meaning 2017, the difference was very nominal. Maybe it was an extra $1,000 or $2,000 we wound up paying. It was a lot less than we thought it would be. And so I think for some people, they're going to have to see where they fall on that line and how chunking, which is the way to give to charities, if that might help them, or if they might need to do maybe a donor-advised fund where you get a contribution in the first year of the contribution, and then you can time out how you want the deductions to go.
Yeah, I had never heard
it all together.
I'd never heard of that before, but it's sort of like Wimpy, right? Promising to pay for a hamburger tomorrow or something like that, right? You make a pledge, but you don't necessarily have to write the check?
Well, I think it's in some cases, it's if you're giving, let's say, a gift of an appreciated stock to a donor-advised fund, you make the distributions from that donor-advised fund in subsequent years, but you take the deduction for the appreciated stock in the first year.
So it wouldn't be just like a cash donation. It would have to be stock or something like that.
I'm not sure. I think It actually could also be a cash contribution, and then because it's going to one place, you may then be able to take the deduction, all at once, which again is this idea of putting it all together so it's bigger, a bigger amount, a bigger write-off, so that allows you to move maybe into the itemized categories.
Interesting. Okay. Another question about this, and this is a little off the rails, but I was having a conversation, I don't remember exactly with whom, but he talked about how he thought it would be better for him to work for his employer as an independent contractor rather than as a full-time employee now, because he could, well, he used the term pass-through. I'm not sure that's the right phrase for it. But on the Schedule C, then, he would pay less in taxes than he would if he were being paid as a full-time employee. Does that make any sense?
I think it's a little bit more complicated than that. And
well, of course.
You know, one of the things, because when you're a contract employee at 1099, but you're an individual, you then end up paying both sides of the self-employment. You pay the self-employment tax, which is, you know, and you also have the taxes removed that the company pays. Whereas if you're an employee, the company pays both sides of that. So if you're a sole proprietor, it may be treated one way. If you have to set up an LLC, like a corporation, the money is paid not to you as an individual, but to your company, which then pays you. There may be some savings if, depending on how you actually take the income from the corporation, and you know, that is all really complicated stuff, because once you've set up a company, you then have to file taxes for the company, and there are other expenses that go along with it that may be underestimated, let's say.
Elise Glink, nice to talk to you. We'll do it again next Thursday.
Sounds good, Steve.